Science perspective.
Welcome to a Writer in the Lab podcast from Newcastle University, providing you with inside perspectives from scientists and engineers in their own words, discussing the nature of science and engineering, the joys and challenges of doing research, and why it matters. In this edition, we feature Team Tau, an intrepid team of engineers from Newcastle University and industry, who competed in the grand final of the Ocean Discovery X Prize, a global competition to advance the development of marine robotic technologies to explore the deep sea like never before. We speak with researchers from the School of Engineering about their advancements in subsea drone technology and competing in the final round of the X Prize.
So we know more about the surface of the Mars or even our moon than our ocean. When you're exploring, for instance, Mars or Moon or any other planets, you're effectively launching a probe that has a high spectrum camera, perhaps, or even other equipment that's able to map the surface of a certain planet in a very quick manner. Now, unfortunately, light does not penetrate ocean. Does not penetrate water. In this case, we have a good few kilometers of ocean this barrier that prevents EM wave or electromagnetic wave from penetrating it. This is why mapping the ocean is a lot more challenging. And we are the technology, really, or the most feasible technology to our knowledge, or at least to this development, is to use sound wave. Really just a sonar. So it's like, imagine you're sending a sound wave from the surface of the ocean, and then you let this sound wave propagate through the ocean, through the water medium. As soon as when it hit for instance a hard surface, or if you like, the seabed, you'll be reflected upwards. Now, to do that, you requires a lot of big sophisticated sonar system to accomplish that. And with the current technology, if we were to just map from the if we just use one vessel equipped with this highly sophisticated sonar system, it will require at least 1,000 years to fully map our Earth. Hi there, I'm HK Chan, or Hua Ki Chan, from engineering, and I work as a research associate for the School of Engineering under the supervision of Professor Nick Wright. So this particular ocean series of X Prize competition, in this case, is the Shell Ocean Discovery X Prize. It was sponsored by Shell in the hope of pushing the development of subsea technology in mapping the seabed. And the challenge that was given to us is that we have to map at least 250 kilometers square in a 24-hour period, and to make things much more challenging, all equipment has to be fit into a 40-foot container. So that is really a big challenge. The typical industrial gold standard of scanning, of mapping the ocean, is to use a very, very expensive AUV submersible that, to be honest, it really just looked like a ginormous torpedo that has sonar bolted on the side of it. What it does is that it swims down, well, to whatever depth of the seabed, and then it will typically hover about 70 meters above the seabed. And then what it does is that imagine you're doing a lawnmower pattern, literally sweeping the seabed in a lawnmower pattern. This is what the XPRIZE competitor used for as a entry submission to the XPRIZE challenge. And in contrast to what we are doing, instead of having a multi-million pound vessel or underwater vehicle, what we tend to have is that it's a much more lightweight, cheaper drone system that swim, which again, it looks like a torpedo. For some reason, that is the best hydrodynamic property to break the ocean wave. So essentially what happened is that our drone is deployed by a surface vessel. If you like, it's really a Cantoraman style vending machine where it will go to a particular targeted location, and then what happens is that it will drop our drone into the water. The drone will start swimming vertically through the water column, hover above a certain height from the seabed, and then do a 360 degree self rotation. So what it does is that during that rotation, it was actually scanning its surrounding in a line form, and then formed this 360 degree point cloud. So after the mission, what happened is that the drone will return to the surface, and then it will be collected by our surface vehicle to be brought back to base or perhaps the next location. To give you a perspective, the robotic system, or the autonomous underwater vehicle, or we call it AUV, that used to scan, used to find the lost, the downed Malaysian airliner MH370. Each of those drones that they use, or each of the AUV that they use to find the MH370, they are the state of the art equipment. No one would have a much better speed or resolution than those a vehicle can carry. And even with that, the maximum aerial scan for those machine that costs up to at least £6 million is 120 km². So it's effectively half of what XPRIZE set the challenge to everyone. So if you like, Sewing Machine Dynamic was the originator of this idea. Newcastle University sort of like jump on the wagon, as well as jump on the wagon to help realizing a lot of this technological challenge that that we are facing in creating a new breed of subsea drone. So Sewing Machine Dynamic, they are, if you like, the world leading trenching and cable laying manufacturer. So what they do as a bread and butter is to create this big ginormous agriculture like looking machine that lays cable around the world. Now in comparison to a lot of the other teams that is taking part of this competition, they typically have one ginormous AUV that probably weighs tons. Effectively, theirs is just a very big man submarine, or at least it looks like a very big man submarine. In our case, we I like this quote from XPRIZE. Effectively, we were told that we can fit 10 of our drones into one of their submarines. And to launch this submersible, of course, you need a big research vessel or any big 150-foot vessel to go out to drop it to a launch site. The asset itself is really expensive. And of course, the operational costs and the effort to get the drone to its destination or to its targeted scan area is humongous. So to give you an idea, to rent a ship big enough to carry one of this boat out there, it's based on the current industrial standard way of doing things, it's about at least $100,000 per day just for the charter of the boat. A lot of this drone typically went into a territory that is poorly charted, and there's a huge tendency that you can lose it. What really happened in XPRIZE final is that one of our competitors lost their drone and their surface vessel, even on a calm sea, in, or if you like, not as rough as a typical sea condition in Greece, they can lose their surface vehicle as well as their submersible. Imagine having this drone running an operation that you pay $100,000 per day to charter a vehicle. And the other thing is that typically when this boat went on operation, you would never see it until 16 hours or 24 hours later. That sort of risk and that sort of anxiety and that sort of investment is pretty scary, I would say. Now we move on to the team tower approach. Now the team tower approach is very different. Instead of having a 150-foot vessel that is, you know, that's this massive ship that sail across the road, well, we have this 40-foot Canterman system that's carrying 24 of our drone. So what happened is it goes around, it goes to its destination, drop it, the drone do its mission, return back to the surface to be collected. Even if by any chance we lost our drone, there are still 23 drones available to continue its mission. It's not like, oh, that's the end of the mission, we have to recall and replan everything. To operate the surface vessel, instead of using multiple crew, scientific crews and experienced skippers, In our case, we just have a drone pilot. Effectively, there will be someone sitting in a comfortable office coordinating where this drone is going around the world, and then all those its functionality can be remotely accessed, and the surface vessel can be remotely controlled to go to do anything to carry out its mission. In terms of costing for operation costs, you would probably think that it's with a manned crew that is sitting in some comfortable office, the cost of running it is pretty low. Now the next thing is the price of the drone. The one of our submersible is literally a fraction of the cost of what the industrial gold standard drone submersible that people uses. So I mentioned about £6 million. In our case, we are able to manufacture our drone under £20,000. And even if you scale about by 24 units of it, it's still way, way under £500,000. But with that particular set of system, we believe our scan rate and our technology can surpass the current industrial gold standard. That's why in terms of cost, operating costs, CapEx, and as well as redundancy, our invention probably have a much more advantages compared to this. So the good thing about this is that, for instance, not every single seabed mapping mission requires a full map of a certain area. For instance, if you're just looking for a down plane or a down helicopter, you can launch a couple of this drone, 1 kilometer or 2 kilometer, you drop one drone, and what it does is that it swims down to the bottom of the ocean, listen to a distress signal or stuff like that, and return back to the surface. From there, instead of having to do a full lawnmower sweep pattern, you can scatter the drone in a much wider area and effectively increase your search area in comparison to a traditional approach that people uses. In our case, even if one of the drone was lost, was caught, eaten by a whale or something like that, which hopefully not, because it's rather huge, we can still carry on our mission because there's always enough drone on board of a system to carry out this mission continuously. Now, the one thing that the traditional technology does are not able to address in this case is to collect water column sample. So when I mention water column sample, it's not that we are collecting the physical ocean sample. Rather, we are sensing the content of a particular ocean column, for instance, the temperature, the salinity, even the pH, or all sorts of different sensors that we can embed into our drone that allows us to understand really the full 3D data of our ocean, not only the seabed, but also the water column, to know what is really going on out there. Now, this is a very, very important thing to do, because up to date, the best resolution that you can get on XY spatial water column sample is 27 kilometer per pixel. So meaning every 27 kilometer, you only have a data of that particular water column. And this is not very, very helpful. Anything underneath that good 2-3 meters are hidden. And this is really, really hard to assess with any existing technology. Our drone has the capability to address that.
To test their subsea drones, they subjected them to tremendous amounts of pressure, similar to what they would encounter deep below the ocean surface. They simulated this pressure using one of the largest hyperbaric chambers in the world, based at the Tyne Subsea National Centre for Subsea and Offshore Engineering in Newcastle. This hyperbaric chamber is capable of simulating subsea water depths of 15,000 metres, a truly astounding feat of engineering. HK took us on a tour of the hyperbaric chamber and explains how they used it for testing the subsea drones before entering them in the final round of Ocean Discovery X Prize competition in Greece.
So a hyperbaric chamber, if you like, it's really a pressure cooker, but instead of cooking it at a high pressure to generate the pressure, what it does is that it's ramming, it's pumping in more water into the chamber to elevate the pressure to a certain sea depth. So in this case, we are able to simulate the sea, the depth of the ocean up to 6,000 meters. So you can see that there's this nice stainless steel, I think it's about maybe roughly about a foot thick of cross-section area, as in the matter thickness is about a foot thick, and this thing goes down to 2 level to the bottom. So what happened is that because our drone is positively buoyant, what happens is that when we this thing will be filled with water all the way to the top, and then what happens, we will lower down the drone on a crane, and then with some weight at the bottom, so it will weigh it down. And then once we do a lower our drone into the water with a weight of weighing it down, we will seal up the hyperbaric chamber and then start the pump. It will ramp up the pressure, and then from there we just design how long do we want the pressure to go up, the rate of pressure going up, how long we want it to stay at a certain pressure, and then how fast do we decompress it. So also all these sorts of things is done through a computing system in the level 1 office. I mean, I was really stoked initially because I worked a lot on electronics equipment, but electrical characterization too. But this is probably one of the largest equipment that I've used in my life.
In order for the subsea drones to produce high-resolution 3D maps of the seafloor, they required a special type of sonar not commercially available. Dr. Jeff Neesham explains the rules of the Ocean Discovery XPRIZE for employing the new sonar technology developed by Team Tau and the challenges involved.
There were a number of particular rules of the competition that drove the design of this sonar. So, for example, we weren't allowed to use any acoustic signals below 200 kHz frequency. The reason being that kept it out of the hearing range of marine mammals. So my name is Jeff Neesham. I'm a senior lecturer in electrical and electronic engineering at Newcastle University. I've worked for over 25 years on underwater acoustic technology, so that's sonar imaging technology and underwater communication technology. And I got involved in Team Tau as an expert on underwater acoustics, specifically focused on the sonar, but also to advise on aspects of communication and navigation underwater. We tend to focus on noise-like or random signals that blend in well with the background noise, rather than what we would call deterministic signals like chirps, which are sort of sweeps in frequency, and these stand out very clearly against the background noise. So we're emitting very quiet sounds which are hidden below the background noise, and our signal processing, our technology is able to pull those signals out from below the background noise. So animals in the area are not even aware that these signals are present, and that makes a big difference. And it's not just a question of what power level we transmit, it's also a question of what type of signals we transmit. So certain signal types are more obtrusive or easier to hear than others. So that posed us quite a few challenges, because sonars aimed at wide area mapping of the seabed tended to be lower frequency than that. So we designed a bespoke sonar just above 200 kilohertz. The other challenge is the sonar has to be quite small and quite low power to work on the Team Tau vehicle. It also has to be quite low cost to fit in with the philosophy of the Team Tau vehicle as well. And so there was nothing really commercially available that ticked all the boxes for the Team Tau competition. So the Newcastle team sort of started with a blank canvas, applying what we know on underwater acoustics and sonar design, and developed a bespoke sonar, everything from the sonar transducer through the electronics package and the processing software to achieve the objectives for the competition. So our sonar transducer is essentially the device which transmits and receives the sound. So it's a device that converts between an electrical signal and an acoustic signal in the water. If we put something too large on the vehicle, it would ruin the hydrodynamics and make it very difficult to operate. And also if it's too heavy, that becomes a big challenge too. So we get a lot of resolution from a relatively small sonar array. And We're aiming for a long distance as well, so in excess of 300 metres scan with one pulse of sound. And doing that at the high frequency at 200 kilohertz is also quite challenging. So we use some quite sophisticated signal processing to ensure we get the absolute optimum signal-to-noise ratio to maximise our range. Yeah, the systems we develop have very wide applications, from scientific data gathering through communication between submarines, autonomous underwater vehicles, divers, all kinds of different applications, and some of them involve quite high volumes of devices. For example, we've just started a project where we're attaching acoustic transponders to fishing nets to enable them, if they're lost, they could be relocated and recovered to try and reduce the marine litter problem. That's an example where there could be a large number of devices out there, and they're only transmitting when they're interrogated, so they're not broadcasting sound all the time. They're just interrogated if somebody's looking for them.
The design of the subsea drone would not have been possible without the ingenuity of the people involved. To save on costs, the team sometimes resorted to using unusual scientific equipment to succeed in building the drone, proving that innovation need not always come with a hefty price tag for doing research.
So we bought a KitchenAid mixer. We bought a very, very big vacuum chamber. The idea is we put the KitchenAid mixer in there. And then guess what? Because we want to mix a lot of chemical in vacuum condition, and to get a proper equipment costs like £25,000, and we only can process a small batch of it, and we will be like, well, a KitchenAid costs £400. A pressure, a sort of like this vacuum chamber costs maybe £1,000 to buy, and another £400 for the pump. So effectively, you get all those system in less than £2,000. What we really did is hook everything up, you know, wire it up to a power supply and stuff, turn it on, and it works. And I was like, just, and then the funniest thing is the procurement team came back and it's like, why did you buy a mixer? And it's like, I was like, oh, this is definitely not for my girlfriend or my, you know, we not have a big sales or things like that. I'm just making this. It's like, no, I don't think it's a scientific equipment. And I was like, right, look at this. So I sent a link from a renowned US manufacturer. They have a KitchenAid in her stuff. I was like, look, this is what people use. I'm just recreating this so we pay lesser money. And it's like, oh, right. I never know that KitchenAid can be used in this sense. I was like, yes, of course, you can use it to mix anything. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's really eye-opening to me. I was like, yeah, yeah, that's what we do in Team Town. It's like everything is eye-opening to everyone. Just off last year, December, we were conducting our field trial in the XPRIZE final competition in Greece. In fact, it's Kalamata, Greece, which is very much near to the Mediterranean basin, or also known as the Calypso Deep. So we have managed to enter the competition area. We did with our drone. If you like, we have done a proof of concept demonstration of how our system will work together. We travel autonomously from the port of Kalamata to south of the Panopolis Peninsula, where we have managed to launch our drone. It swim about 700 meters to the bottom of the ocean and carry out this mission. In the XPRIZE final, we managed to demonstrate our system, considering we have only 18 months to put it together. I would say that that's a success to us. That is the conclusion for the XPRIZE competition, unfortunately. So we were given 7 days of trial period to really go out to the competition area from a forward operation base, and then carry out the mapping mission. From now onwards, really, we were just even though that's the end of XPRIZE, we are still continuing to develop this technology. But in reality, we do not know anything about our oceans. And to be fair, in terms of species discovery and to fully know what are the organisms that live underneath our ocean, it's pretty much unknown until this day. So I believe a lot of people are familiar with the work of Alan Jamieson, where he found a couple of new species of snailfish around the world. This is something probably unimagined of. People would never would thought that, oh yeah, we know everything about ocean, we know what lives in it. But in fact, we only know perhaps the first 300 to 500 meters of the type of organism that live around in that region very, very well. You know, for instance, the fishes that we eat, as well as some of the crustaceans that we know that live near shore. Now, anything offshore, anything deeper down into Mariana Trench and perhaps one of the deepest trenches around the world, we have effectively zero idea about it. Knowing more about our ocean maps, I suppose, allow us to unlock more economical potential of mining exotic matter from it. So that is something perhaps will be quite interesting for our mining company. So effectively, our funding runs the end of March, and then we still have a month from UKRI to do trial, system trial in Loch Ness. So we will carry on our development until the end of April. And from there onwards, hopefully we are able to look into business cases where invention from this team will be hopefully spin off into a company by itself. And I guess everything from there, it's pretty much speculated. I can't really say much, but I hope that we are able to carry on this invention and make a huge impact in the subsea world.
You have been listening to a Writer in the Lab podcast recorded here in Newcastle University, presented by Emily Barker and produced by Brett Cherry and Daniel Parry. To find out more about Team Tau and the Ocean Discovery XPRIZE, visit team-tau.org or visit ncl.ac.uk/sage. Thanks for listening and see you next time.